Boot check. Basketball, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college.
Oh, is that time already?
Whoa.
Welcome in to another episode of the Heat Check Hangout, your number one source for all things basketball, basketball, college. I'm your host, Brian Ralph, joined as always by my co-hosts, Connor Hope and Riley Davis, here to break down the Final Four. Not the four we expected. I honestly have not looked at our Final Four draft, and I think other than UConn, I don't know if anybody had the teams that are left.
You had Boom. You had UConn, right?
Boom!
And FAU.
Wait, he had FAU
by Cinderella. I had the first pick for Cinderella.
No, he wins because FAU's every win counts, right? So he has 4 points just from FAU, a point from UConn. I had Miami, so I have a point. But
oh my god,
done. This is Brian wins. Miami could win it all.
This is 2 years Brian, in a row.
So
just want to two for two in this thing that I started. So.
You also drafted North Carolina, which should be like minus 5 points, though, if we're being honest.
Yeah, so. But I dropped them. They weren't on the official team going into the tournament.
But you still should be penalized for
having faith in them and making me
be delusional about my team. All right, yeah, we don't have to harp on it.
I tried to gloat about my San Diego State Final Four pick in the preseason, and like immediately five responses were, yeah, but your UNC title pick kind of canceled that out. I'm like, yes, thank you. I'm aware.
No, you deserve all the victory laps for San Diego State, dude. Like for real. You got to dunk on some people anytime.
Connor was in on it too. And we had a podcast with Kai doing some gambling odds before the season started. And Connor, his long shot, he wanted people to take a flyer on was Miami. So this is why you listen to the Heat Check Hangout. We hang out and we give you good picks.
If California was cool, I could have put $100 on Miami like I wanted to at 120 to 1 odds to win it all. They'd be running into a really tough team.
Yeah, so we'll get into this Final Four preview. Miami obviously is going up against UConn in the second game. On Saturday night, the Final Four, the marquee game. UConn is the number one team in KenPom. I know people have talked about there not being an elite team in the Final Four. UConn seems to be that, according to all the analytics, has been that on the court. They have won all four of their NCAA tournament games by at least 15 points, beat the snot out of Gonzaga in the Elite Eight. Sorry about that, Connor, and this former Gonzaga podcast. They look the part. There's a lot of people that are a lot of media people, especially, who I think are essentially handing this national championship to UConn already. UConn might very well win. Like from what they've shown so far, they've looked like the dominant force that started the season undefeated, that ran through the back half of the Big East schedule. Excuse me, Connor, is this UConn's to lose essentially?
I think the way they're playing, and granted, we're going to talk about who they played and how the teams they have played. A lot of that has to do with UConn. A lot of that can also be attributed to some struggles outside of UConn's control. They look good. But as far as the elite team goes, this is only the third time since KenPom has been a thing where the top team in KenPom, UConn this year, has had an adjusted efficiency margin under 30, the third time. The other two being 2006 Florida and the 2003 Kentucky team with Keith Bogans and Chuck Hayes. Those are the only two teams that have led KenPom in adjusted efficiency margin at the end of the year and been under that third plus 30 threshold. So they're good. They're a fantastic team, but I would hesitate to call them elite, and I think it opens up the door for teams that are playing really well, Miami, in this upcoming game, to maybe take advantage of that. They're not unbeatable. Granted, I think a lot of that might have to do with that January that UConn had, but I just think that to crown them this early is what people were doing with Gonzaga heading into the 2021 NCAA tournament. They made it to the championship game. They didn't win it. So you can crown, and they were a much better team over the course of the year in 2021, Gonzaga was, than UConn was this year. Granted, there's no Baylor this year, but UConn still has to win.
You mentioned that rough January for UConn. I found this interesting going into some research for this game. UConn was 2-6 from the last day of December 31st through January 30th. 2-6. They're 27-2 outside of that month stretch. Miami, during that same time period from December 31st to January 30th, was 3-6. They were 26-3 the rest of the season. Both of these teams had really bad months and have been dominant otherwise. Riley, as UConn goes into that matchup, do you think we'll see some of those that dominance, or is Miami uniquely equipped to potentially expose some of those cracks that caused that rough month of January for the Huskies?
Yeah, with UConn, I know Connor's signed the adjusted efficiency margin. I respect it. However, I can't help but notice, like, just looking at what UConn's done this tournament with beating every team so far by double digits, they have a chance to keep that going on into the Final Four and in the national championship. And if they win these next two games by double digits, again, big ifs, it's been a really unpredictable tournament. They'll be the first team to win every tournament game by double digits since 2018 Villanova, an elite, elite team. The last team to do that before them, 2009 North Carolina, also an elite, elite team. So that's where, like you said, that, I mean, granted, if they win both their next two games by double digits and are the national champions, like, that efficiency margin probably goes up. But I do think that that January can make it a little bit deceptive with the advanced metrics, considering how well they've been playing. And I just, like, I really like this Miami team. I've been in on them. I would say, like, in on them since they beat Duke by 24, where it looked like Duke couldn't make an entry pass against them. They were jumping passing lanes, taking them the distance. And to me, that's where it showed that even though Miami's a – they might still be sub 100 on defense and on KenPom. Maybe they're a little higher now. But I think they can make up with it with how timely and opportunistic they can be forcing turnovers. And they have – two really good individual defenders in Jordan Miller and Wuga Poplar, who I just think maybe some other numbers throughout the season have sort of negatively inflated. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but just made the defensive numbers look worse than they actually are. That being said, as far as being able to pose matchup issues for UConn, it's tough for me to see it, even though, I mean, Omir has been awesome against guys who are way taller or have better length than he does all year. Like, he has held his own against the Kyle Filipowski and Derek Lively's of the world. He's held his own against Armando Bacot. He's like, his lack of height has not hurt him. But to me, I think it seems like such a frightening matchup when you got to go from Adama Sanogo to Donovan Clingan. Like, if it was just one or the other, I think Omir could hold his own. But the fact that if Omir gets in foul trouble, Miami doesn't really have any counters. And if Sanogo gets in foul trouble, you just got to deal with Donovan Clingan, who's a giant and will catch any lob thrown his way and just grab every board. Like, to me, as good as UConn's guards are, that's kind of the key right there.
Yeah, Matt Painter needs to watch this game to see how you use big men against a smaller team and not just take them off the court.
That's a fact.
Well, and it's not just big men. Remember, the talk the entire tournament has been about the balls, right? And we've seen it. We've seen teams, the bounce of the balls. We've seen a lot of turnovers from teams that don't generally turn the ball over the way that they have because of the balls. The shooting's been off. UConn shot 44% from three, 45.5% from three, 45% from three, and had their worst shooting night against Gonzaga, 35.5% from three. Like, they're shooting well in a tournament where nobody else has been. So the matchup in the front court, yes, is important. But I would argue that, you know, you almost are willing to let Omir go, or whoever is going to play the five in some of these minutes, go one-on-one with those bigs, hoping that they only shoot 60% in order to shut down what has been the best shooting team in the tournament by a country mile. So I think that front court Omer has to be able to at least hold them to 60% or less. But I don't think you're going to double down trying to get them to shoot under 50. It's just not going to happen. You're going to foul a ton, and you're going to leave shooters open, or you're going to leave Andre Jackson open on cuts so that he can get a quick 8 points in less than
Connor.
Six,
you
seven
you had
minutes.
This question posed to you.
Did y'all see?
Go ahead, Riley.
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, I was just going to say, if y'all saw that the JG Trends graph that tracks UConn's 3-point shooting in the tournament, and they're shooting 42% from off the dribble threes in the tourney. So it's not just that they're knocking down the step in threes, the catch and shoots, like when Sanogo kicks out to a shooter from the post or Andre Jackson does a little drive and kick. Like, they're having dudes like Jordan Hawkins, Tristan Newton, who are draining shots off the bounce. Like,
it's the Jordan really Hawkins sidestep threes. Those are technically off the bounce, and those are sweet.
Yeah. Those are a thing of beauty, man. Those are so smooth. I love Jordan Hawkins so much. He's so fun to watch.
Connor, you had this question posed to you online, and it goes back to, I think, what we talked about at the top about this essentially being UConn's Final Four to lose. I was wondering if UConn has played its toughest test or the best team they'll face in the tournament already. I think it's an interesting debate because I think the correct answer is probably maybe. Like, I don't know.
The correct answer to the first question, right, toughest test, is no. The correct answer to the second question, best team, is yes. I truly believe Gonzaga was a better team than any team left in the Final Four. Besides UConn. UConn was just good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were going to beat Gonzaga no matter what. UConn did a lot against Gonzaga defensively. Gonzaga also did a lot to themselves, missing open shots. And it was the worst game Gonzaga has played, mm-hmm, in shooting wise, in well over a decade. Well over a decade. And so Miami is going to be a tougher test for UConn, presumably, than Gonzaga was, even if Gonzaga was the better team. Mm-hmm. I think Miami's defense has gotten a lot better in this tournament. Their offense is better equipped, I feel, to not have a down game because they aren't as reliant on those jump shots. They aren't as, you know, if Nigel Pack's not hitting jump shots, they have guards, mm-hmm, that can attack the rim. Mm-hmm. So it's now on Sanogo and Klingon, and I had Andre Jackson as my key player for UConn in the Final Four. I almost put Klingon in there because if Klingon can play 15 minutes of I'm going to shut down the rim basketball, Miami's in a world of hurt because they've been shooting well this tournament. They are not a fan. They don't rely on the three. They are better at attacking the rim than they are jump shooting. And if you can take away that aspect of their game, I don't know how good their jump shots will be. But to say that UConn stays tough as test, no. Because of how bad Gonzaga was playing, because of the injuries that happened to St. Mary's, I think Miami, San Diego State, and FAU are all going to be tougher tests. That said, when you look back at this tournament, their dominance against Gonzaga might be looked at as that was the point. If they win, that was the point at which they won the national championship.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. I'll transition here to Miami a little bit because I do think Miami is equipped to exploit some potential problems with UConn. UConn deserves to be here. I'm not going to suggest otherwise, and they are the best team, the favorites going into this. But Miami's, given teams that were better during the regular season, given them issues with their backcourt, and their backcourt gives everybody issues. And you can even stretch that backcourt down 1 through 4 if you want to, counting Wong, Pack, Wuga Poplar, and Jordan Miller. You have four guys on the court who can all score, can all get you 20 points in a game, all play pretty solid defense, some better than others, but all of whom who can create their own shot off the bounce. And this is something that if you've heard me talk about really basketball at all, which if you listen to this podcast, you have, you've heard me hammer that point over and over and over again, is that teams that are the most dangerous in these tournaments are the ones who have multiple creators or somebody, at least one person who can go get their own shot consistently. Miami has, I think, three you rely on with Long, Pack, and Miller. And it makes them incredibly tough to stop because you have Andre Jackson for UConn. He is generally a perimeter stopper and a phenomenal defender. Let's say you put him on Long, the ACC Player of the Year, right? That makes sense. All right. Miami still has Pack, who was the regional MOP, and Jordan Miller, who just was so efficient, he did something that hasn't been done since Christian Leitner in 1992. Like, and Miami is playing at a really high level, but that's where they get you. And UConn's strength is down low. Their backcourt is good. It is not great. When they struggled in January, it was because of the way they struggled on defense, defending the perimeter. All of their metrics across the board, field goal percentage, three-point percentage, defending drives, everything like that, fell off. Came back. Right, that's what made that surge back in the second half of the conference schedule. But when they struggled, it was because they struggled defending the perimeter the way they normally do. They've gotten back to normal, so I'm not going to say that they're completely down and out and have no shot to stop Miami's guards. But like, Miami's guards are tough, and they're going to create something out of structure. That to me is where the game is going to be won or lost, is how UConn adjusts to that. I brought up Matt Painter before. Matt Painter adjusts to small teams all the time by going away from it, not doing anything, not going away from his strength, right? Like, just throw the National Player of the Year the ball, right? Like, UConn can take advantage of this unique Miami lineup by just punishing them inside, right? Give it to Sanogo or Klingon down low, have Andre Jackson cut in when they go to double him. And I think you try and win that way. But if Miami's guards push the defense enough to where Hurley feels like he has to go smaller to defend it, then that strength and major advantage UConn has isn't there. So that's just a little thing I want to see in this game that I think could flip it one way or another.
And I think what we saw against Gonzaga was promising, because even Klingon, who probably the least athletic guy on the floor for UConn, he's a fantastic basketball player, so don't take this the wrong way, but of the players on the floor for UConn, probably the least athletic, was getting down the floor before Gonzaga was. Like, they can get up and down the floor, those bigs, and you have shooters that can make shots, which I think is where UConn's going to be able to take advantage on their own offensive end by just spreading this Miami team out, pounding the paint, and as soon as Miami tries to double or tries to do something, they've got shooters. But Miami does as well. You have got Jordan Miller, who's a 35% shooter from three, and then you've got four other guards, including Bensley Joseph and Wuga Poplar, who are all 38 or above from three. So they can all shoot as well. But I think it's going to be won and lost on the perimeter. I agree with you. I just don't know how low I am on UConn's guard play, given the team.
Like, I don't think they're bad, right? It's not, I hate to keep bringing up Purdue, but it's not like they're Purdue, where it's like it's an obvious weakness. I think they're good and can win a national championship good. I just don't think that they are great all around, right? But that you don't necessarily need to be, particularly this year. Riley, with this Miami team, if they were to beat UConn, how do they do that?
I mean, I think we've hit on the guard play a lot. And something that I think has proved especially true this year is the teams that have advanced, teams that have made runs, are the ones who can pressure the rim. You talked about the shot creation earlier, Brian, and I'll take that one step further and say the dudes who can get to the rack. And with Miami, they got those four guys who can do that. And I wish I had the numbers in front of me to see like what they're shooting at the rim, especially in the tournament. I think that would probably give a pretty strong indication of which teams are advancing. But to me, I think you gotta attack the rim. You gotta try to get both Sanogo and Klingon in foul trouble. And I don't know, hope that Nigel Pack has another 6 or 7 3-point performance in him. I mean, that's kind of how I see this team winning. And you need at least like 4 threes from Nigel Pack. I feel confident saying that. And Isaiah Wong, he's got to be cooking in the mid range as well. I feel like, you know, if you're not able to get those bigs in foul trouble, if they ref the game physically, like has been the case for many tournament games so far, take advantage with what spots you can get in the mid range. And Isaiah Wong is maybe the best in the country at doing that, like finding the soft spot in the defense and hitting a tough jumper.
So here's a stat for you guys in terms of UConn's losses in January. In five of the 8 losses, UConn shot under 31. They shot 31% from deep or less. This first game in an NFL stadium, in a football stadium, the first half can always be really tough on shooters. Sight lines are different. Mm-hmm. You're now at full speed. Like, you get practice, but you're now at full speed. But all but one of the games that they lost, their opponents either shot 55% or better from 2-point range or 40% or better from deep. So Miami just has to make shots. And whether it's inside or outside, I agree with you, attacking the rim is probably their best bet. But if they can get shots and have a little bit of luck defensively from three, I think they can do it. But UConn is, I mean, Dan Hurley's come out with really good stylistic play to match each opponent he's played in this tournament so far. And I'm certain that UConn's going to have something. Miami, to me, has to be up 2 to 3 possessions at the half if they want.
So who wins?
Yeah.
Before we move on.
Can I add something on Dan Hurley?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it might sound kind of dumb since he's already in the Final Four, but I'm just like, this might be the latest in the case of the Scott Drew, the Tony Bennett conversation of the guy who can't win in March until he does. And I was actually doing some research for this for a Field of 68 headline I wrote this week, but even looking at what he did at Wagner, where he won 25 games in his second season there, which is a school record, looking at getting 2 tournament wins at Rhode Island, a Rhode Island team that I think hadn't won more than 15 or 16 games in the 5 to 10 years since before he got there. And I was even reading a press release from UConn from 2018, the day that he was hired, where it was highlighting his ability to rebuild programs. And that is basically what he did with a UConn team that had missed the tournament in 3 of the 5 years that Kevin Ollie was there. So looking at his history, none of this is really that surprising that he's actually a really freaking good coach who just had a couple bad breaks the last 2 tournaments.
So, but
I know you're going to ask who we think are going to win. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll go with you, Riley. We'll start with you before we move on to FAU San Diego State. Who do you have winning this matchup?
I got to pick UConn, man. I think that's the team. Like, they put those issues they had in January behind them. Again, this has been a crazy tournament where nothing would be surprising. It would not be 0% surprising if Miami continues this run. But just what my eyes have told me with how I love how UConn can get out and run teams off the court, but also lock them down on defense. I love that they can hit. They have a bunch of shooters on the court who are hitting open threes and off the dribble threes. Jordan Hawkins is my guy, and I'm taking UConn in this one.
Connor?
I'm gonna take UConn. I think they're the best team left. I think that their guard play, at least from a size and length perspective, is enough to match what Miami has from a shot creation perspective. And I trust every piece that they have through their entire rotation. Right? There's not a player on this UConn team that I look at and say, I don't want him on the floor. And when you have that on a deeper team than what Miami runs, I just have to stick with the Huskies.
I'm going with Miami, and I don't feel good about it. But I think Saturday night is when Wuga Poplar becomes more of a household name. And I think he's going to make himself a lot of money. He is an excellent defender, and I will be shocked if Miami doesn't throw him on Jordan Hawkins and just tell him to hover Hawkins. Hawkins is awesome. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player for a decade plus. I think he's been the key to this run, really the key to this UConn season. I love watching him play. He's not great off the bounce. I know we just talked about his sidestep threes, and he's got that in his game. But generally, if you make him put the ball on the court to make a play outside of one dribble, he is not the most effective. And Poplar is the kind of defender who has, one, has the size and length to match up with Hawkins, but two, who can get in somebody's grill and stay there. If that's his focus, not necessarily worry about getting beat to the rim, because Hawkins hasn't proven he can consistently do that against tough defense. I think that throws enough of a wrinkle in UConn's offense, plus what Miami's going to get, to have Miami win a very, very close game. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, but that to me, and that matchup in particular, might be the difference.
See, to me, the reason UConn wins, and it's going to sound dumb, Calcaterra and Ali, they've both been shooting tremendously. They're deeper in the rotation, so they're coming out on fresh legs against a Miami team that has a short rotation. And I just feel like they're going to come out, probably only combine for, 15 to 18 points, but it's going to be a very critical 15 to 18. And so
I think those
bench pieces. Yeah. But I think they can do it. I think Miami's going to put a lot of pressure and a lot of effort into that starting five. And we saw them hit key shots against Gonzaga. When they came out on fresh legs, Gonzaga was tired.
Yeah.
And it paid off. And I feel like that's going to be a very similar story on Saturday.
Let's stay in Florida. Look at the Owls of Florida Atlantic. 35 wins on the season, more than anybody else in the country. No fluke that they're here. Even though they're the 9 seed, they've been playing at a really high level all season long. They're, I think, discounted because they played in Conference USA, which, as we now know in March, may have been the best conference in the country. Who can say? They're going to have an NIT title, depending on what happens with the result of the North Texas UAB game. Charlotte won the CBI. FAU is here. I also think it's interesting that all four of those teams will be in the American next season. But I digress. FAU, Riley, can beat you a lot of different ways. The way that they've done it so far, though, this tournament has been through pretty big second-half runs. That's been fairly consistent. It doesn't feel like they've played their best game, but it also feels like they were convincing winners in all of their games, aside from the Memphis game, which I'm still a little bitter about. But what do they need to do to keep this run going?
Yeah, I think you mentioned those second-half runs. I kind of have a tough time seeing them being able to do that against San Diego State, just because San Diego State's defense is so tough and they'll slow the game down. But, you know, we saw them do it against Tennessee that has arguably a better defense than the Aztecs. So maybe it's something like that. But I think, you know, how they can keep those second-half runs going is continuing to play unselfish basketball, continuing to move the ball. It seems like everybody on that team is like a plus passer. There's not a single ball stopper in sight. Like, even if you get the ball to the big man, Vlad Golden, down low, like, he's looking for dudes who are cutting if he gets doubled. It's just a really impressive team that can move the ball in a lot of ways. I love that they got someone like Elijah Martin, who is kind of known for his shooting, but he's another one of those dudes who, if he's cutting baseline and you got Golden from the low post, or you got one of the guards get into the elbow, like, they're going to find him for a lob and he can punch one. Mm-hmm. So I think it comes down to their offense being able to move the ball to get good looks against a really tough defense. And on the other hand, on the other side of the ball, they got to continue to play physical, which, you know, good news for them. They've been tested already by a very physical team in Tennessee, so where it's not going to be something that's new for them when they're going against tanks like Jaden Ledee and Nathan Minza and Matt Bradley. Lamont Butler, all those San Diego State dudes are units.
Connor, how does FAU win this game?
Just withstand the pressure. Like, just do what they almost take what they did against Tennessee and up it by 10 against San Diego State. Like, San Diego State is not, I hate this term, they're not going to beat you by outscoring you. That's not how they win. They're going to beat you by forcing you to take bad shots. And what we've seen from FAU throughout the entire tournament is just they don't. They search for those good shots. They get the players in space. They will hit Golden down low in mismatches. They'll do all of that to get the good shots. And they beat Tennessee by just continuing to score. Like, Tennessee is going to went through lulls. San Diego State's going to go through a lull. That's just how they play. And so if you can get up on San Diego State, take away those easy buckets at the rim, force them to shoot jumpers, and just don't give in to the pressure that they're going to put on you. Like, FAU has every tool in its arsenal to win.
I agree. John L. Davis is the key for me because, talk about shot creators, he's that guy for them late in games. They want to get him the ball going left and let him make a play, and he's done that time and time again in this tournament. I continue to be impressed, too, with this team. They go about 9-10 deep. It seems like everybody has made a major contribution at some point in this tournament late in a game. Michael Forrest is the guy who stepped up and hit those free throws to basically clinch the game against Kansas State. Didn't score. I don't think he scored a point in the first weekend. Right. And then came up big in their Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. And to me, that summarized this team. Golden made some huge plays down low when they needed to make them. Elijah Martin obviously had the huge freaking slam against Kansas State and made plays. You go up and down this list. He made the play in this game. Yep, he made a play in this game. That to me is impressive. I think it's helped them get to this point. I also think it hurts them against San Diego State because San Diego State's the same kind of way, and I think San Diego State's guys are a little bit more talented and a little bit bigger. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I think that this is the game you need John L. Davis to get you 20. And he certainly can.
If you get them 20, that's 40% of the way to beating San Diego State.
It's so true. Let's go to San Diego State now. They might have the most impressive win in the tournament, knocking off top seeded Alabama. But their games have been, with the exception of the Furman game, have been grinders. And Connor, I know that's the way this team wants to play. How many more wins can they grind out?
I think they're going to have to take advantage of some of the looseness that Brian Greenlee plays with. Darian Trammell, Lamont Butler are going to be matched up on him all night. They force a ton of turnovers. He coughs the ball up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. I mean, FAU coughs the ball up just in general. They play really free-flowing. They'll turn the ball over. But I think Brian Greenlee is part of that. And it's those two are going to have to be the guys who beat FAU. Because once FAU gets into their defensive sets with the way that San Diego State scores, it's not really going to be easy. But if Trammell and Butler can get out in transition and get a, you know, 4 or 5 transition buckets at the rim, that's a cool 10 points that came really easily that I think will go a long way in helping them beat FAU, because FAU doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And so you're going to have to force your way into some easy shots. And that for San Diego State has been Trammell getting out in transition. So
Riley, what are the chances you give San Diego State of advancing to the title game?
I would say it's about even. I mean, I can expand a little bit more when we get there. I would pick FAU. I think FAU wins the game, but I think it'll be a close contest regardless. I'm not like FAU's going to wipe the floor with these guys. With San Diego State, you know, the advantages I do see is like I mean, Darian Trammell seems to be like he's made for these moments. It's you look at his numbers, and aside from what he had 21 against Alabama, his numbers haven't been huge this tournament, but I swear he just makes second half buckets that feel like they're worth 5 points. Like the guy makes big plays, and I think having a closer like him down the stretch could give them a slight advantage, but I like wouldn't sleep on John L. Davis either. And like he's been pretty awesome down the stretch as well. So I think it'll be a really tight game. If Matt Bradley awakens from his leisurely slumber, whatever he's been going through, like, bro, he's 5 for 19 from three in postseason play, including the Mountain West tournament. He's only made 5 3-pointers in like the last 8 games.
I think he scored 8 points total in the second weekend. And that's your leading scorer, averaging 4 points a game, and you beat the top seed and beat a good Creighton team, the Elite Eight. Like, anything he gives them offensively, the San Diego State team still has another kind of level that they can reach.
Yeah, true.
You brought up the Tennessee game, both you guys did, and I think for FAU, and Tennessee and San Diego State play very similar styles. That Tennessee game, what FAU was able to do, Tennessee led a majority of the way, but Tennessee went through one of those lulls offensively where they didn't score a lot for 10 minutes, and FAU kind of struggled, and then, bam, there's the go button, there's the 18-2 run, game's over. Or at least FAU had control and then held on the rest of the way, turned out to be game over. San Diego State is susceptible to those kind of lulls as well. I think the difference between San Diego State and Tennessee is that San Diego State has shown in this tournament when that lull ends, it's 7 quick points in a minute. It's 9 quick points in a minute and a half. Like, they get out of it and it's like, yep, okay, found it, here we go. And they don't make up for it, but they get back on track very quickly. Tennessee is like, here's this lull, we made a basket, cool. Here's another mini lull, we made another basket, cool. And that was what FAU took advantage of to sweeten the game back. If they don't take advantage of those 3 to 4 minute stretches where San Diego State's offense looks atrocious, San Diego State's going to win this game. Because they have those lulls and then just looks an awful offense. Then, like, Trammell shows up and hits a couple beautiful step back threes or jumpers off the bounce and pick and roll. And, you know, there's 5 points. Suddenly, I'll pick on that Creighton game. You know, Creighton has a 1 point lead. San Diego State goes out in a lull, pushes out the 6 or 7 in a span of 2 to 3 minutes. And you're like, oh, well, this is going to get this TV timeout and Creighton's going to be up. I think they're kind of in control. And then in the 30 seconds for the TV timeout hits, it's a 2 point game. And you're like, how did that, what happened? And they just couple quick buckets, boom, back in it. Defense gets back on. You picked FAU, Riley. So we'll talk more about that in a second. I like San Diego State for that reason. I think this is going to be, I think the general consensus or the casual fan is writing this game off as a ho-hum because it's FAU and San Diego State, not two brand names. But I think this game has a chance to be an absolute banger and one that goes down to the last couple of minutes and be fitting for what we've seen for feels like every game, except for the UConn-Gonzaga game. Sorry, Connor. That we've seen this tournament where it's close and down to the wire. And I'm going to give San Diego State the edge. They're making just a few more plays down the stretch. But Riley, why do you think FAU? I know you said you wanted to expand that a little bit further.
Yeah, well, first, I'm going to cape for the Blue Bloods and say, yes, I'm excited for this game. I think it will be a banger, but I wish we had a couple one seeds, maybe some two seeds thrown to the Final Four. Just not Duke. I guess they're a 5 seed, but yeah, I won't cape for that Blue Blood. But that's where I got to be the bad guy there and say, our guy Greg Waddell compared this to the Myrtle Beach Invitational with the 4 teams we have left. And I think Greg has a point. It does kind of look like an early season MTE. Not to say I'm not excited for it, but I just had to, you know, get a little joke off right now because I'm still hurting about, you know, my Tar Heels not being there and then adding a Brown transfer, but we don't need to go down that road. But I'm going to pick, I'm taking FAU just because of that ball movement, because of how connected they play. And even just, it might sound odd, but like that game winning play that John L. Davis made down the stretch against Kansas State, where he didn't even let them get his shot off, like immediately doubled Ish Masood before he could do anything. Like those type of toughness plays tell me everything I need to know about this team, and even makes me think I I don't think this is out of line to say, but I think FAU has a coaching advantage here. Like, mm-hmm. I think I like Dusty May better than Brian Dutcher. Looking what he's done with this program, I mean, it's unbelievably impressive. And the fact that they've been able to sustain this focus, like, well past, like, any of your typical Cinderellas have. And his guys are getting recruited. His guys are getting tampered with while they're on this run. And he's still kept them focused. I mean, it's just a marvelous coaching job, even looking at the numbers. But when you watch this team play and how they play, it's like, dude, this guy is a stud.
Yeah, and I think you can say that.
That's why I think
you
can say that
without it being a slight at Brian Dutcher either. Like, that's more of just how good mm-hmm. Dusty May is and has been this season. Connor, who do you have winning?
So I'm going to start off. I love this Final Four. And I think casual fans who don't know the names might say it's bad, but you have the number one team on KenPom mm-hmm. and most analytics. UConn's number one on Torvik, etc. You have the team with the most wins in the country in Florida Atlantic, that their raw efficiency margin, I believe, is top 10. They're adjusted because of Conference USA.
Nation's best conference.
Talk all day long about weather conference. But therein, San Diego State's played the best defense in the country since February 1st. And I know Kevin Sweeney put out that tweet that, you know, your recent play doesn't necessarily translate. They've been the best defense since February 1st in the country. Sweet. And then you have Miami, who you could make a very strong argument has the best backcourt of any team in the
country. Miami also made the Elite Eight last year, returned half their people, including two starters and an ACC player of the year, Isaiah Wong and Jordan Miller, got two of the best transfers in the country, and like we didn't think they were going to be good. Sorry.
So yeah, they all good, four teams point. Won their conferences in the regular season. So this is a really good Final Four. FAU didn't get over a 9 seed because they played in Conference USA. Okay. San Diego State struggled early, and that caused them to get a 5 seed. Okay. UConn and Miami had terrible January, so they got a 5 and a 4 seed. Okay. But when it comes down to it, these are four of the top 15 to 20 teams in the country, and that's really all you can expect out of a Final Four. Like, it's not like we have some random team that's, you know, barely top 35 or top 40 in it. Like, we've got five legitimately good teams. We just don't have, you know, I was looking at ticket prices, and I think tickets now are going for like $100 to $150 before all the fees. And even in the 2011 Final Four, which had similar seedings, Kentucky was there and they were going for like $300 a seat. But like, sure, it might not be great because casual fans might not tune in. But as far as the basketball being played in this Final Four, I think it's going to be excellent. My winner for San Diego State FAU is FAU. I think they've come out and played the perfect defense in every single game they've played. When Michigan State was playing Marquise Noel to pass, FAU said, we're going to give you all the open mid-range jumpers that you could ask for. And it worked. FAU met the physicality of Tennessee. FAU actually played a defense that could stop Fairleigh Dickinson, as opposed to Matt Painter, who everyone claims is one of the best coaches in the Big Ten, who refused to play any semblance of defense that would handle a five out when you have the best big man in the country. So I think they're going to come out. They're going to make it really difficult on San Diego State. It might be a game that's won in the 50s or 60s. I think it's a race to 60, and I think FAU is the one that gets
it. So if we have those teams winning, Connor, who's winning the national championship? Because the next time we do this podcast, it'll be a championship recap and look ahead to the offseason.
Do I do it?
Do it. Hootie who?
I like FAU. I like FAU. Oh my gosh. I really do. I think they're going to come out.
Considering the Owls
when no other team has figured out how to defend UConn, who's been the one team San Diego State can defend their asses off? But who's been the one team that switched up their defense every time they played to meet the offense of the other team? FAU. And so when you're looking at that, and they can score, I don't think they're going to have a poor shooting night. They have guys who can make plays. You can't just overload on one guy because they can all make plays. And I think they're going to go into this game in the national championship with a chip on their shoulder saying, we are going to prove them wrong. And I like FAU. I was raised a UConn fan. Maybe this is me not getting my hopes up. But I think FAU has what it takes all over the floor. They have a big and golden who's playing the best games of his life in this tournament, who I think can meet the challenge in that UConn front court and throw a wrench in what UConn wants to do.
Riley?
Yeah, I don't know if that's coming through, but my dog is just going nuts in the background. I heard Buddy going off from Connor's audio as well. Our dogs do not like the disrespect of the Huskies because the Huskies will... as much as I like this FAU team, as highly as I think of Dusty May, I feel like UConn wins that game by 15. Like, it might be over before halftime. Then again, no halftime lead is safe in the national championship, but I still like UConn to advance because eventually, like, it's just too much talent. There's legit pro talent. Like, those dudes are on a mission. They play really good defense.
That wound's still fresh, Riley.
The way I would put UConn, though, is the first 10 minutes out of the half, third quarter UConn is the third quarter Warriors. Like, they just come out of that halftime explosive. So I actually think any team that wants to beat UConn has to be up at the half. And of the teams that can be up at the half on UConn and continue to put that pressure on them on both ends of the floor, I think FAU is the best equipped. Now, UConn could win that game by 40, but I think FAU is the best. If UConn were to lose, I think FAU is the team that's equipped to beat.
I want to say Miami. So I'm going to say Miami. We'll do that. I have some concerns. So my championship game of picking this is Miami against San Diego State, and I have some concerns about how they would deal with San Diego State's length. But I think there's something to this being like the crowning achievement of Jim Larranaga's career, right?
He has
said during this run that he's going to coach, like, he's not close to being done. But I think if they win the national championship, I think there is some consideration given to it. But he also doesn't have to really recruit because he's got Life Wallet to help him out. I think this ends up being the crowning achievement of his career. I think this Miami team is flawed, but every team in the country is flawed this year. And they pose some real problems because of the unique way that they play and the personnel that they have and just the talent level of that personnel poses problems. I would not be shocked if they lost to UConn. I wouldn't be shocked if they lost to San Diego State in a potential title game in that matchup. I think I'd feel okay with them against FAU. But there's just something about this Miami team to me where I think they get it done. They find a way. They have enough versatility. I think they're the ones cutting down the nets. And since we all picked a different team, it's going to be San Diego State since none of us picked them.
Hey. They're going to win both games by a combined like 112 points. And everyone's going to be angry. Except San Diego State.
So yeah. I know we need to get out of here.
You're taking Spring of the Short King a little too far.
I know we need to get out of here. Before we go, do you guys remember the discourse before the Virginia-Texas Tech title game in 2019 and how everybody thought it was the worst thing for the sport and going to kill the sport because it was two defense-first teams. It was going to be first to 50. It was going to be ugly and gross. And it was like a super entertaining overtime game that was 80-something to 70-something. I think we see something similar where the discourse coming in is like, this sucks, and the games are incredible. And the ratings reflect that. Personally,
you remember that Virginia Texas Tech game? I want to say it started out like I feel like it took both teams forever to hit double digits, but once they got rolling after like the first 7 or 8 minutes, that game was awesome. Because like the first 7 or 8 minutes, everybody was like, oh, this game sucks. It's what you expect it to be. And then it got rolling.
It was like 32 to 29 or something.
Which is fine. That's a fine college basketball score.
And yeah. And Virginia put up, I think, like 15 points overtime or something like that.
Dang.
But there is something to be said about when you practice against good defenses all year long, you know how to score again, play against good defenses offensively. It's kind of that reverse. Like, you could be a poor offense, but your floor is so high because of who you practice against that when you get up against good defenses, you're not going to dip as much as, say, a Gonzaga or someone else, a Purdue does when they come up against a defense that knows how to play against them, where then their scoring goes way down because of the way their defense plays in practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, we aimed for a 30 to 45 minute podcast recap tournament so far, preview these Final Four games, and we're at just about 51 minutes. If you can't tell, we are excited for this weekend's games, and we think you should be too. That'll do it for this episode of the Heat Check Hangout. Again, your number one source for all things basketball, basketball college. I'm your host, Brian Rao, joined as always by co-hosts Connor Hope and Riley Davis. Thank you all very much for watching or listening, however you are consuming this lovely content. Enjoy the games this weekend, and on Monday night, we'll talk to you again next week.
Basketball, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college.
Oh, is that time already?
Whoa, basketball college.
Come on.
Basketball, basketball college.
Oh.
Basketball, basketball college.
Oh.